This is Greater LA, the show that connects you to the people and places of Southern California. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Happy holidays. On this Christmas Eve, we have a special show, a collection of some of our best stories from this year. And we're going to start off the highlight reel with people sentenced to life in prison, or what are called lifers, who've gotten a second shot at freedom. But for some of them, there might not be family waiting for them when they get out. So that's why there's a group of middle-aged men, other lifers who have already been released from prison, that gather for a monthly meeting in a room south of the Coliseum on Normandy Avenue. KCRW's Lucy Kopp attended a welcome home ceremony for just paroled lifers, and she brought us this story.
Jonathan is one of the guys being welcomed home today and is glad to see some familiar faces of guys he met in prison who've been out for months. And now they're here to support him.
For the last few years, I've been around guys who have been on the same path of rehabilitation and redemption. And some of them are out, some of them are beginning to come out. So I knew the gentlemen who came out before me were blazing a path, and it was nice to see some of them there as well.
Up until about a decade ago, a life sentence meant that you'd probably spend the rest of your natural lifespan in prison. Between 1990 and 2000, 97% of people who had the possibility of parole were not actually paroled. You could count on your hands the number of people getting out on a yearly basis. Today, that number pushes 1,000 every year.
The reality is you have a life sentence, so the parole board can essentially deny you and you can die in prison. Fortunately, the public sentiment, the government, the new criminal justice reform movement arose, and the opportunity of getting out for lifers who had been working on themselves manifested.
We know how much work we appreciate the community being here to support us.
My name is David Smith, but I'm better known as Smitty.
Smitty is running tonight's Welcome Home ceremony. He works for Francisco Homes, a local organization that offers transitional housing to those getting out of prison after life sentences. And on evenings like this, Smitty is running around, making sure everyone has a chair to sit in, answering calls and texts from newly released guys who get lost on their way here. Smitty has been on both sides of the ceremony.
I did 28 years, I think it's 4 or 5 months and some change in days.
Smitty's been out of prison himself just over 4 years. And he knows that when guys get out, unless they have family support, they're pretty much on their own, tossed back into a fast-moving world. So he takes a lot of pride in the position he's in today, to support others in their transition home. And he uses the welcome home ceremony as a moment for him to personally pause and reflect on his own path as well.
When I get to see someone else do it now, it helps me stay centered and focused and remembering how I felt, which makes it, I think, a little bit better for me to communicate to the individual who just came down and like, dude, I was there. I know how you're feeling. Don't worry. We got you.
Every welcome home ceremony begins with announcements.
So we have a few birthdays that have passed.
Then it's job opportunities, general housekeeping. And in between each announcement, the audience offers a light applause. And a man sitting in the circle uses a drum. And the drum isn't just a frivolous addition to the evening. It's deliberately tribal. And so is the candle of hope burning in the middle of the circle. The symbolism and ritual, it's all meant to create a lasting memory for the newly released lifers. And show guys like Jonathan that they're not alone in this.
Gentlemen, we want to encourage you to take this time of transition to heal and acclimate to life as a free person after spending such a long time away. We welcome you into our community and wish to support you through this process and celebrate your opportunity for a second chance at life.
For so long, it's very easy to entertain the notion that out of sight, out of mind, folks just forget about you. And yet when you get that warm, welcoming, that embrace, like they're there to say welcome home, it's very sobering.
The men being welcomed home have a sort of glazed over look, but they listen attentively as Smitty reads their names one by one.
I want to welcome you home, Antonio Webster, Alonso Gonzalez, Nathan Jones, Jonathan Barber.
Jonathan's not just thinking about his newfound freedom tonight. He's thinking about the reason he's here in the first place, the tragic event, and his victims.
I struggle with conversations where it seems as if I'm being put into the spotlight. What was lost for me to get here? A person's life was lost, a family was fundamentally altered. And for me to be here and to enjoy some things that they're not able to enjoy, I'm very humble and grateful for that opportunity.
Gentlemen, the Francisco Holmes gives you a souvenir, a token, whatever you'd like.
Then each former lifer gets a key.
We give you the key so that you remember.
That key is the symbol that you're now unlocking the door to all the dreams that you had while you laid in the bed or the bunk or when you were out on the yard.
And then, as the men study their new keys, a row of candles are laid out to create an illuminated pathway towards the center of the circle.
It is our job to show them how much we support them. So if we can get started, everybody, let's get them going.
The newly released lifers are invited to step over a wooden plank at the end of the candlelit walkway, crossing a symbolic threshold into their freedom and echoing an old slave ritual that was used to confirm a marriage union. Within seconds, the energy in the room elevates with a new lightness as the procession begins.
And it's the opportunity for the guy to come on home. Come on home. You can come any way you want. You can dance, you can skip, jump, doesn't matter. Come on home. We're over here waiting for you.
In the moment, I went ahead and embraced it, did a little dance, ran through, jumped over the threshold, and shook hands with all the welcoming people behind.
Thank you, everyone. Welcome home. That concludes our ceremony.
I didn't have a concept or idea what freedom was until it was gone. And when it's gone, when you're not able to make decisions for yourself and choices and just basically live, you learn to appreciate exiting of the dungeon and the ability to fly again. It's something special in it, and I will never, ever take for granted.
The room empties, and all that's left are a few people stacking chairs and someone dragging a suitcase of snacks out the door. The community will show up again next month for the same ceremony, and those who are welcomed home tonight will blend into a growing circle of support for the next batch coming home. For KCRW, I'm Lucy Kopp.
Coming up on this special Christmas Eve edition of Greater LA, I can't tell you exactly where we're headed next because the location is secret. But we're going to see what it's like at a farmer's market for pot. That's next on Greater LA on KCRW.
Introducing the KCRW donation car, designed to be recycled. This first-of-its-kind vehicle will save you time, space, and hassle by disappearing. Enjoy the luxury and comfort of turning your underused car into a donation worth hundreds, even thousands of dollars. The KCRW donation car, already in your garage, driveway, or on cinder blocks outside your house. Act now at kcrw.com/cars.
Back now with our Best of Greater LA Holiday Special. I'm Steve Chiatakis. Next, we're going to a sesh. If you're not up on your pot lingo, that's a pop-up, unlicensed cannabis market. One of many across the state offering cannabis buds and concentrates and edibles directly to medical cannabis patients. Now, California's legal cannabis market is set to finish up at around $3.1 billion in sales this year. But the thriving unlicensed market is expected to be much bigger, almost three times as big, at an estimated $8.7 billion. A lot of that is being sold in places like this sesh. KCRW's Abdullah Saeed takes us through this warehouse door to find out how everyday Angelenos are buying their weed.
It looks like a regular weekend farmer's market, except you won't find organic tomatoes and peaches here. I'm inside a large space filled with 20 to 30 picnic tables, each boasting a variety of cannabis products, buds, hash, edibles, and vape carts for customers to choose from. While the phrase black market elicits visions of shady characters selling illegal goods out of the trunk of a car or the inside of a trench coat, what you'll find at this sesh is an open atmosphere, where some people are simply shopping and others are hanging out, smoking, and socializing. Music is booming from the DJ booth, and food trucks are right out the door for when folks get hungry.
I think it's a if you know, you know type of deal. You know what I'm saying? It's not really spoken about or advertised anymore. So it's kind of like if you're in and you know, or if you're cool enough, someone will let you know.
If you're a medical cannabis patient in the know, you can find a sesh in LA on almost any night of the week. The organizers will announce the location via text and social media a couple of hours ahead of time, and all you need to get in is your medical cannabis recommendation.
You got people opening up bags, looking at nugs. You got people heating up nails, ready to get higher. You got people in line waiting for specials. It looks like, you know, every booth has something that they offer that someone else doesn't. Be it like, you know, 2 for $10 or buy three, get one free. It's all marketing.
This is Adam, born and bred in the San Fernando Valley. He's the unofficial host of tonight's event. He's got long black hair, blinged out glasses, and a Joker t-shirt. The customers, the vendors, everyone knows him. The place is packed with mostly young, mostly black and Latinx patrons, feeling the good vibes as they smoke and peruse.
I come for the environment. I come for the medicine.
Some are there to party and hang out.
Hey, how y'all doing tonight, man? Everybody getting high. I love it. I love it.
Also, there's a practical reason why seshes see so much foot traffic.
Better prices.
I feel like right here is the best prices.
Like what you spend $50 here for, you'll probably get a lot more and a lot better stuff than you would spend $50 at a compliance store.
Compliance store. That's a licensed dispensary, like MedMen or any other legal shop. At a compliance store, you pay a sales tax of up to 25%, making products prohibitively expensive for some medical cannabis patients who used to pay no tax on weed at all. Medical cannabis patients tend to consume more than just a small recreational amount. The ones who can't afford current dispensary prices come here to buy wholesale, sort of like a Costco. Not to mention, they don't love the new compliant packaging, which they say is ruining the shopping experience.
If you are over 21, you can just walk into any compliant store and buy weed at a top price with tax, and you don't even get to like look at it or smell it or touch it. So here, you can still experience the product.
Adam, the Willy Wonka of this sesh, says these events provide a service for people in need. Where there's demand, there will be supply, and no one's getting hurt in the process.
I don't think they cause that big of an issue for certain folks because we're not causing any violence. There's no trouble going on. We're just kind of our own group of people that know what we like, trying to save money and smoke the best weed.
But finding the best weed can come at its own cost. One customer, Jacob Garcia, who works for Whole Foods by day, says he's been a medical cannabis patient since 2005. As a longtime smoker, he knows that there's some risk involved with buying at a sesh.
I've been doing cannabis for a long time. I kind of know what to look for. I'm not going to say that everything here is clean and safe, but I trust my eye, my nose.
The benefit to buying weed at dispensaries is that products are rigorously tested, so you can trust what you're buying is likely clean. But to sell weed at a sesh, there's no requirement to test your product. Here's Adam.
I'm not saying everything in the traditional market is dirty. I'm just saying you have a lot more risks out here.
And one concern on everyone's minds as of late are the carts, vape cartridges.
But ever since all the controversy, you know, a lot of people aren't really with those.
He's referring to the recent national concern over vaping-related illnesses and deaths, and data showing that additives found in counterfeit unlicensed vapes, like the ones found at seshes, could contain dangerous contaminants. The state of California has warned consumers not to vape and not to buy bootleg cannabis products. But a crackdown on carts isn't stopping sesh events and the unlicensed market from thriving in general. Doug Dracob is the owner of Hitman Glass, a pipe and bong company. He's been in the cannabis industry both before and after recreational legalization. He says that sesh events like this one are going to be around for a long time.
There's always going to be a wholesale market for off-the-books cannabis, and to be quite frank, I'm in a financial position where if I have $400, I'm going to buy 2 ounces instead of an ounce. Like, I just can't afford to pay the taxes right now. California is taxing every single level of people that are cultivating, processing, the distributor, and there's no logical reason for any of these people to transition.
Maybe the customers are content not to transition into the legal market, but for many of the vendors at this sesh, going compliant and selling their cannabis in a licensed dispensary is the ultimate dream. Aaron, the first vendor you heard from, said he's tried to transition to selling on the legal market, but that road hasn't been easy.
Here in California especially, it's kind of, there's a lot of red tape and it's expensive for most companies to just jump in. We need to raise capital, and that's why a lot of people are still in the black market.
That being said, he's trying to go legit.
We are currently working on getting a license. The thing is, it's just so expensive because in a lot of these places, you have to build out infrastructure. That's why the black market is currently thriving, because there's all these people that want to do good and that want to provide a good quality product, but the regulations just make it almost impossible to do so. You know, I trust me, I want to be in the recreational market.
An hour into the sesh, there are about 200 people browsing the aisles, smelling nugs, and filling their shopping bags. At the night's peak, an ice cream truck pulls up out front. A bunch of very high folks quickly form a line. It's definitely a great spot to sell some cones. Where there's demand, there will be supply. For KCRW, I'm Abdullah Saeed.
Well, just ahead, we're meeting the four-legged mayor of a small town called Idlewild. You're listening to Greater LA on KCRW. Onward now with Greater LA on KCRW and our holiday special. We are closing out the show today with a behind-the-scenes look at a small-town mayor's office just southwest of Palm Springs. About 15,000 people live in Idlewild, and its mayor runs a completely nonpartisan platform. His goal is to spread unconditional love and to do as many good deeds as possible. The mayor's name is Max, and he's a 6-year-old golden retriever. Reporter Kirsten Zilm drove up the mountain to meet this special breed of politician.
He says, hello, Max. Look, we're going to the
front. Mayor Max's pickup truck rolls into Idlewild and parks in front of a store that stands out between rustic restaurants, an ice cream parlor, and a souvenir shop because it has a humongous cowboy hat over the door. Fans gather to greet the canine mayor, who jumps around on the truck bed. He wears a red plaid tie. His chief of staff adds a brown hat. Then Mayor Max is ready for his close-up with constituents and visitors.
Are you ready to pose, honey?
Yeah.
You are. Okay, here we go.
Oh my God.
Mr. Mayor, let's do the pose. Are you ready?
Phyllis Mueller cheers him on to pose for selfies. She is a middle-aged woman in black sweatpants, a baseball cap with an American flag and sequins perched on her long gray blonde hair. She shakes a bag of dog food and holds treats up in the air.
Chicken, turkey, bacon. Close your mouth all the way.
A constant stream of admirers surrounds the truck. They want to shake Mayor Max's paw, pet his fluffy golden brown fur, and just see for themselves that he really does exist.
I drove by and I've been wanting to see the mayor, and I saw the mayor. I had to jump out of the car, no shoes on.
Okay, go flat-handed.
I think it's adorable. I think it's just fun to have something different that's lighthearted, political-wise.
No platforms, no agendas, no disingenuous speeches.
And he's all worth it. He lives up to the hype. He is nothing but a gentleman.
How can a dog be a mayor, you might ask? Well, first of all, Idlewild is an unincorporated town governed by the county of Riverside. That means there is no official city government. It never had a human mayor. The idea of a pet taking the office came from the local nonprofit Animal Rescue Friends in 2012 as a fundraiser for the organization. They asked residents to nominate their dog or cat. Votes were for sale at $1 apiece. Citizens of Idlewild nominated 14 dogs and 2 cats. Phyllis and her husband shamelessly bought the election for their candidate, Maximus Mighty Dog Mueller, with a check for $20,000.
Obviously, I wanted to help the organization, but really what I most wanted was for my dog to be the mayor so that I could create a fun and wonderful, loving, kind mayor's office for Idlewild.
And that's what she and her husband did. Apart from showing up to spread some love in town and to take pictures, the mayor and his deputies promote local businesses, visit hospital patients and the terminally ill, attend fundraisers, private parties, and the tree lighting ceremony. Mayor Max represents Idlewild's spirit, says the editor of the local paper, the Town Crier, Melissa Diaz-Hernandez.
We have this mayor now who's become really like the symbol of Idlewild. I mean, there are people across the country and I think world who know about Idlewild because of Mayor Max.
He never causes controversies and has other traits rarely seen in politicians.
He's a really well-behaved dog. I think he's the only mayor that gets away with taking a nap on the job.
This Mayor Max is actually the second dog on the job. Mayor Max the first also was a golden retriever. He died in 2013, shortly after his term was extended to a second year. Phyllis found 3 puppies that are related to him, distant cousins. Mayor Max the second started his job when he was only 11 weeks old. At that time, he did nap a lot. By now, he barely gets to rest. Especially when times get rough in town, like during recent road closures up the mountain, or when Idlewild had to be evacuated because of the Cranston fire. In times like that, the mayor brings even more smiles to everybody, including exhausted firefighters.
He was kind of on the job even during the fire, you know, like we were helping with other rescues and things like that, trying to get, you know, the horses out and all that kind of stuff. And I went to the fire department, talked to the chief, and I said, what can we do to help? And he goes, said, go out and thank the fire crews. You know, so that's what we did.
For Phyllis Mueller, tasks and responsibilities that come with a job are fun, but not a joke. She always answers the mayor's phone, even when it's a prank call in the middle of the night. Her hard work has been rewarded. Mayor Max now is elected for life at the request of his constituents. Everybody in Idlewild loves him, like 8-year-old Layla Martin.
When we did the tree lighting ceremony, I met the mayor, and it was really cool because, like, it's a dog, what?
And Mim Andrews from the local jerky store.
Most people are dog people, thrilled that our mayor is a dog. I mean, we're governed by unconditional love and acts of kindness. Why wouldn't you like that?
Running the mayor's office has become a second full-time job for Phyllis and her husband Glenn. Their first jobs are in marketing and sales. They pay all the mayor's expenses and have not been on vacation since Mayor Max the first was elected. Phyllis says it is all worth it. She's involved with her community, but without the difficulty of real politics.
What a wonderful opportunity to be the mayor of Idlewild in a non-political way and not take sides on issues or have a city council forcing me to do something I didn't want to do and creating all the drama and dialogue of there's 2 or 3 sides to issues.
After a day of posing, shaking hands, and eating lots of treats, Mayor Max gets some exercise in the backyard of his office.
All right, we're going to do 2 more, Max, and then we're going to go in the house. Ready? Ready? Okay, and this will be the last one, and you're on break.
He has another event scheduled for the evening. The local film festival asked for his presence, and of course, Mayor Max will not miss a chance to spread his message and some love. For KCRW, I'm Kerstin Zinn.
He says he loves you.
Well, that's it today for Greater LA. What a big treat for us as well. On this holiday edition, coming up next on KCRW, DNA with Francis Anderton. We're online, of course, at kcrw.com/greaterLA. Once you subscribe to the podcast there, share your thoughts with us too at kcrw.com/askgreaterla. Jenna Cagle, Kaylee Wells, Sonia Guys, PJ Shahamat, Ray Guarna, Phil Richards, Christine Camito, Amy Ta, and Christian Bordahl make this show happen each and every day, and I thank them for their support of this program throughout 2019. I'm Steve Chiotakis. Thanks for your ears and for your time. Merry Christmas, happy holidays, and happy New Year.